Jesus. You're right.
Yeah.
I'm already in a mood.
And clearly.
All right. I'm coming off a natural high, a work high, and hi, this is Maddie Blake, Tony Arkins, Brooklyn. We're rated P for paranormal. My man, I just interviewed Ralph Macchio.
What?
From The Karate Kid.
Oh, how cool.
And Cobra Kai. And my cousin Vinny.
This morning?
Just now, like literally an hour ago.
Wow.
And I'll tell you, I think I've mentioned on this podcast before, maybe I haven't. I don't know. I talk a lot for a living. I forget what anecdotes I share and what I don't. I'm sure people who listen to this podcast are like, oh my God, he's telling that story again. But Karate Kid was a big one for me. And I was able to tell Ralph Macchio, who I've met once before briefly, which of course he doesn't remember, at a lunch with our mutual agent at the time. I was able to tell him, like, wow, Karate Kid really meant a lot to me as a young kid. I got emotional because here's the thing. I was just going to thank him, like, wow, you know, again, I know you get this all the time, Ralph. I was one of your Karate Kid monsters you created in seventh grade. I saw Karate Kid for the first time, 1984.
Which is weird because you guys are like the same age almost. And it's weird now that you
he's got a decade on me and he looks like he's younger than me. Well, let's figure that out. He's 10 years older than me. So I was what? I was 13. So he was 23. And I had serious like self-esteem and body image issues and stuff. And I really did. And I hung out with all these kind of like alpha guys. And it turned into this thing where I had seen him on Fallon talking about the audition for it. And he wore like an oversized sweatshirt and coat because he's like, I had very skinny shoulders and I felt self-conscious about myself. So it's ironic. I got the part that is about a kid kind of getting bullied, being undersized, having a chip on his shoulder. And so when I was expressing this with him, that I really had serious body issues and went to go take karate, and it gave me like new lease on life where I felt confident. And I got a little emotional in telling him that. And he goes, you know what, man? He's like, as much as you got from the movie and you say it changed your life, I get from when people tell me stories like that. It was sincere and it was just an awesome moment. And like, what a cool.
Did this happen on the air?
No. I mean, it was just a picture of him.
Right.
It wasn't actually him.
Right.
And there was no broadcast.
Of course. This was in your basement.
Mom! I'm performing down here, Mom. Yes. No, it was recorded for my radio show, which will air right. Tomorrow morning.
I was going to say, what's he going to say? It's on the air. He put him on the spot.
I did. Actually, that was a funny thing going on in the interview, too, because he goes, how did I treat you that day we met? And I said, you were so nice. He's like, all right, I got about 15 minutes to ruin it. And then he kept saying nice things. So at the end, we had a big laugh. He goes, I blew it. I was nice to you. And it was great. It was just, he was just, oh, what a mensch he is, man. Oh. I'm going to try to do this without getting emotional because.
Oh, this is going to be good. Yeah, baby.
You talked about your shoulders and you had thin shoulders. I was skinny and I hated my own body. Mm-hmm. And when I started doing karate, like, and it gave me confidence and it changed my life and the martial arts changed my life. So I just want to thank you for that.
That's awesome. Listen, that, you know, stories like that, there's such a two-way street. What I gain from hearing that story is equally as much as maybe you got out of it. It's an inspirational character, an impactful character. And he was the every kid next door. So thank you for sharing that. And it gives me a chance to give that back.
So how did you land him on the show?
Because of our mutual agent, the Buchwald Agency.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So Buchwald came through.
I know that tone. That tone is, why don't we at P4P get guests like that?
Well, I mean, that was maybe an opening to have that conversation and invite, you know, our listeners in on the business, the behind the scenes business workings of the show.
To which I'll say, we can now openly say that our next episode will feature the showrunner and executive producer of Skinwalker Ranch, Jason Shook.
I certainly hope it's the next episode. You know, I mean, we've been waiting a long time for this. I can only hope and pray. That it works out.
No, I told you P4Pers, I would not promote it again until it was locked in. It is locked in.
All right. Time to get a little nervous.
Well, we just won't do another episode to record. See you next year. You also got us some incredible guests on this very podcast. I don't know why I'm talking like Donald Sutherland all of a sudden.
I don't know. Yeah. All the kids are talking about Donald Sutherland. That's why.
Actually, I do an imitation of Donald Sutherland in the movie. Oh my God. This is going to piss you off. Lock Up with Sylvester Stallone.
Oh God.
And at the end of that movie, that freaking classic, the evil warden, as played by Donald Sutherland, is trapped in the electric chair. And his head is pinned back. And he goes, okay, all right, all right. I confess. I confess to everything, Leone. I confess. And then Stallone hits the switch. And he's like, oh! But then nothing happens. And Stallone pulls out the battery and goes, it works better with this.
What movie is that? Which one is that?
It's not an actual movie. It's another Maddie exclusive. Done.
Oh,
in
it's
my
just
basement.
Something that you you think about in your own mind.
I play all parts. Donald Sutherland / Stallone.
Great.
That movie's called Lock Up, Tony. Actually, I think you'd enjoy Lock Up. You and your brother should do Lock Up. Why don't you guys do a Stallone marathon?
Why don't you?
Tell him I'm going to be hyped from Ralph Macchio interview. I haven't shut up in like 11 straight minutes.
Well, it's been an exciting time for you. You got Dee Wallace on the show. You got Ralph Macchio on the show. I mean,
it's a good point.
You know, look, Buckwald is good for something. Listen.
I'll tell you what. It was a weird thing to have a childhood hero like that and then all these years later be interviewing him. It is weird. It's a weird business like that. And you've worked with idols on sets. You know how it is.
Oh, I've met a lot of people that have kind of made me tongue-tied.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get real, you know, I've met a lot of, you know, actors because we're actors and you meet a lot of people in the business and stuff. And I don't get weird about a lot of folks, but the ones that I do, I just can't relate to at all. I can't talk to them.
Give me three celebrities right now and I'll play two that you would really be emotional in front of, like, you know, be a little tied and affected where you'd have to kind of like, whoa, I got to control myself here.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's probably a list, like a really serious list that I could think about and give you smart answers to and everything. But I guess the first person I think of is if I met Harrison Ford, I'd probably trip over myself.
Yeah.
That would be pretty heavy. I don't know if I could really talk to him.
That's a good one.
I don't know.
That's a really good one.
What about you?
I don't know. I'm going to have to think
I'll
about
stop.
That. I'm going to have to really
it's too
think
easy.
About who.
That's too easy.
Well, that's the
you
guy.
Could talk to anybody.
That's
you,
the guy. Meeting Sly Stallone for me would be like meeting a Beatle. Like, just love him or hate him. That's one of the most famous creatures on the planet to ever do what we do. And man, he's given me hours of entertainment. Some of it ironic, some of it not. I was able to tell Ralph, I think John Avildsen, who directed Rocky and Karate Kid, I think all kidding aside about Karate Kid, it's a fun movie and it is what it is. It's a great, you know, teen sports movie, but the shot of Mr. Miyagi revealing the blocking system to Ralph Macchio, it's a one shot, them in profile. And he goes, show me paint the fence. Show me what that. And the camera slowly pushes in on them and then settles. And then he goes, ooh, and he does them all at once. And then they bow. I always look at, I think it's one of the greatest scenes in movie history. Like, I put it up there with anything.
I'm going to pause while you lay in the scene from Karate Kid for 2 minutes.
Shut!
Hey. Hey, look, I always look, I come back. Tomorrow.
And we're back. I was a Karate Kid fan too. You know that. We share that.
I do.
I you know, I was the and then as a kid, I wasn't really into sports much at all, let's face it, much, not at all. So this was a rare sports movie, but it's not really a sports movie. You know, that's the thing about it. You can really approach it in a lot of different ways. It's a very philosophical movie for me.
It
I feel
is.
like that movie gave a lot of morality and to our generation in a way. Like, you know, not that we're in the same generation, as you've made very plainly clear, but you were a little young for this movie,
Seventh
honestly.
grade. See, and it's funny. I told Ralph this too. I call him Ralph next. We're close.
Not Ralphie.
It was Karate Kid 2 in 1986. You know, Karate Kid 1 made me take karate. I was very focused on that part of it. Karate Kid 2, when I was now a freshman in high school, that movie woke me up in ways like, what was that character's name? Kimiko, the girl.
Oh, she was
Like,
great. Yeah.
everybody talks about Elizabeth Shue. I was almost too young to even go there. It was all about the karate for me. And then, but Karate Kid 2, I was like, whoa. Then I saw about maybe I would like to have a girlfriend and travel. And it was like,
Right.
so that one caught me right at the right time.
Woke you up. Woke you right
Woke me
up. I
up.
like that we're talking about all these paranormal films and supernatural films on our show. Dude, that's the added bonus for listeners. This might be a maybe this is the portion of the show that's only for a paid audience or something. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
We've gotten more than one request, and I'm not just saying this, from fans who say, why don't you guys just do a regular movie every once in a while? Like, just talk movies. And so to those fans, I say, you're welcome. Don't
Th
even
those
just.
those people must be crazy, because who would want to hear us talk about a regular movie when there are movies like, you know, well, maybe like what we're going to talk about tonight. Actually, maybe we should cover a regular movie. What did you see?
We've been talking for 12 straight minutes, and I've acted out like three scenes
No,
full on of
you
three
say
different
we've
films.
been talking. You've I don't know if we've been dis I don't know if it's been a discussion.
The grand we, Tony.
Sorry.
Tonight's movie is Prey, which is appropriate because Tony is praying that I stop talking at some point. Come down from my Ralph Macchio high. And we're going to do top three inspired by that movie, top three dog buddies of all time in film or television history. Top three dog buddies, because there's a great dog buddy in this movie. Dog
Oh,
buddy.
there's it's fantastic, yeah.
Yeah. So that's what we're going to do. Tony, what's going on with you? Did you interview any member of Cobra Kai or Karate Kid today?
No, I did not. Thanks for pitting us against each other in another competition. And don't look proud of it. As I'm saying, this was an ironic statement. You're like, yeah, I know. Okay, don't thank me on the air. Like,
Give me
go
the
proud
Ralph
of
Furley.
yourself.
What do
Yeah. I got nothing on that. What can I tell you? I've been
Oh.
it's been a quiet time, introspective time. I'm
Yep,
doing some
good.
writing.
How's that going?
Dude, it's just a private thing, man. This has been how I spend my time. And
Won't ask again.
don't. And I've been seeing some stuff. And you
Ther
know,
therapist? Did you say you're seeing
I've
some?
been seeing some stuff, as in, you
Oh,
know, therapists. Plural.
I'm like literally like I've been seeing some. I'm like, stop. Oh, I thought you were
Yeah,
going somewhere
no,
else with that.
I've been seeing
You've been seeing someone?
we're way outside the boundaries of the show. I feel like this is contractually completely outside the boundaries of what we agreed we'd talk about on the show.
You have two Matthews in your life on two separate podcasts that
I
seem
sure
to
do.
get your goat.
I they you work at it. You figure it out w the ways. You have access to the button that triggers me.
Well, good. I hope that writing process is going well because I can't wait to see whatever it is you come up with next.
Like I said.
Private. Don't ask. I'm sorry. I've
I
overstepped. I'm a bad dog buddy. Yeah, I was looking
but
like this and tilt my head.
right, exactly. You look like Michael Myers in Halloween, just staring at me, your head cocked to the side. I'm recovering from Halloween. We haven't talked since. See, that's the thing. I feel like, you know, we had a pre-Halloween show,
All
right?
right, our Halloween special.
And then we had
Freddy
Halloween,
Krueger.
and we haven't really seen each other or talked how to show since. So I
Dude.
feel like I've many things to say, but I don't even know where to begin. And you just want to talk about Ralph Macchio and sports movies and
Well, I can segue unbelievably well that I interviewed Ralph Macchio.
Mm-hmm.
Seltzer water. I interviewed Ralph Macchio, and for this Halloween, I dressed as one of the Cobra Kai kids, you know, the skeleton, like spandex costume.
Oh, yeah. That was yes.
My, yeah.
Right.
So
right.
There you go. It all ties in.
It does.
How about you? Oh, you had some magic pictures from your Halloween.
Well, I had some nice shots of the neighborhood. It was kind of like before the crowd started, because honestly, when the crowd started, there wasn't time to take pictures, Maddie. It was crazy. I didn't know they take it really seriously up in that town.
There was a band.
There was a band that had just set up on the corner lawn in the front yard of this house, and they must have been all in high school, and they blazed a set for like, I don't know, they played for 2 hours straight, at least, maybe more, and it was just nothing but Iron Maiden and Black Sabbath and Zeppelin. And it was great. I mean, they were really good.
That makes me so freaking happy that they're playing that music.
It was a big surprise for me. I didn't really expect to hear that sound coming out of this group. They looked like, you know, they looked like a nice group of teenage kids, but I had no idea. Because it started and I'm like, well, maybe this is a live broadcast that somebody's playing or something. It just didn't sound like a local band.
Right. They were awesome.
The coolest thing about it was that it gave like a soundtrack to the night, because it was always playing in the background. And it had that real 80s metal vibe to everything. And it was kind of perfect.
Everything we talked about heading into this Halloween, we both experienced, like the magic of it and how it's becoming our favorite holiday. Same with me. Yeah. The street was shut down. We were out there. It's just so great. And Max went off to a Halloween party with his friends.
Right.
The street was closed down. People came from all over. Now it's starting to grow. My street is starting to get a reputation. So fun.
Maddie, there were people that there. I turned around and there that I looked, and there was a 60-year-old woman going through the candy and picking ones that she wanted.
Yeah,
with her 65-year-old friend, and they had no kids, and they started telling, and we were like, "Oh, hello," and they were like, "Hi. We came up from Florida, and we just traveled together, and we came up from Florida. You did a nice job." And then they left.
Holy shnikes.
No, it's like that. Like, people will travel. They fly in to come to town.
Is it because it's near Sleepy Hollow or something? Like, you know what I mean?
Well, that helps, because it's kind of the whole area is like the Hudson River Valley area. Westchester. Sleepy Hollow vibe thing. Washington Irving and that whole thing. Mm-hmm. So that's only 20 minutes away. Yeah, that's part of it. But it's also just that, you know, it's just, it looks like a stage Halloween. Setting for Halloween.
Yes, the houses, the neighborhood, the leaves.
Yeah.
It's so great. That makes me
hundreds,
so happy.
Hundreds of kids, we I think we had 30 pounds of candy gone by 7:30. We're out by 7:30. We're like, done. Sorry.
We got to stop age, like the whole age thing with Halloween. I say, as you would say, open all night. If you want to trick or treat and get candy and you dress and you act appropriately, go nuts. Right? Why? Why do you have to stop in high school? Why do you have to stop? Why couldn't you and I go trick or treating?
Did I say that these ladies were in costume?
Oh, they weren't even
No. They were just like tourists. And they were rummaging through our candy. Yeah, right, like it was weird.
That's an asterisk to my...
It was a little strange.
You got to at least dress up.
Like, put a hat on.
Yeah.
That's something.
I think we sent... I don't think we did. We sent each other pictures of each other's Halloween. And one of them I sent you was such a classic. It was a father-son, I believe, in the classic sheet ghost. They were just... Mm-hmm. The sheet ghost, right? Walking down my street with the fall leaves behind them. But I'm like, why do these things look so cool? And one of the things about their costume was the mother put screen mesh where the eyes and mouth was. So it wasn't sliding or so it was cool. They had the kind of black screen eyes and a black mouth, and then the white sheet coming down. It looked so, and that picture, I should post that picture. It looks so iconically Halloween. It looks like something out of a magazine, you know.
It looks like that from E.T.
Oh, it does a little. Like the little E.T. and the So, man, I'm so happy for us both. What a great Halloween.
It was good. It was really fun. Introduced family and friends to some new horror movies they hadn't, like old horror movies they hadn't seen, and it was great.
Give me, you watched
we watched Mothman Prophecies.
Yes.
My mom and our friend Liz and friend of show Liz had not seen before.
Yes.
And really hooked them. They're fans now.
Awesome.
And I, you know, that movie gets better every time I see it. Seriously. Yeah. I think it's great. I think it's so great.
So glad we reviewed that movie.
Yeah. And then, The Shining, which they hadn't seen in 20 years, I guess. And
holy shnikes.
And then the Psycho.
Oh, okay. Psycho is so frigging scary still.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a crazy, it's a crazy movie. And you forget how crazy and disjointed and disturbing it is in so many ways. I mean, and none of it better than just the scenes of them sitting in that in the back office talking and having sandwiches. Like, that's just one of the greatest scenes in history.
Thank God they had that CGI spider girl climb backwards down the stairs, you know.
Oh, it saved
the
picture.
And the CGI monster with the ghost coming out with the
sky. Yeah.
That's what made it.
Yeah, save the picture. Otherwise, it'd be crap.
Right. Wouldn't be scary at all.
We'd go see that.
Right. Can't get any scary less CGI.
My mom saw Psycho when it first came out, and we were talking a little bit about that. And so that's a fascination of mine because I really have never been able to imagine how heavy that movie must have been for people when they, I mean, at that time, 1960, come on, man. Then she said, it was really like, it was intensely, insanely scary and messed up to see that.
There's a movie I just saw recently, and I'm not even going to say what it is. I told you about it though, because it's what I'm about to say has a bit of a spoiler in it. It's the action movie I just saw. And something, we lose a character in it, and it happens way late, but you really don't think it's going to happen, really. And it's so shocking. And then I thought of Psycho, watching it, going like, imagine what seeing someone die in the first act would do to someone back then. Like, now it would mess with people. Like, you just don't expect to see the girl die like that quickly. It's not what
it's
the rules
still
were.
Yeah, it's still, it still would be weird things, like really weird things to do to an audience today.
Yes.
And then even though everybody's stolen from it.
I'm sorry, I cut you off, but I was going to use your words anyway. You always say you don't feel in safe hands. And it's like, when you do something like that early in a movie, it's like, now you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's not really even that early. That's how assured that movie is.
Mm.
I mean, it doesn't happen until 30 minutes or 40 minutes into the film. You know, we're talking about the shower scene and I was also thinking about this. I know this is off topic because Psycho's not paranormal either. Or is it?
Maybe the mother really was talking to her.
Right. Okay. Collect your thoughts. All right. So first time viewers. The movie's called Psycho. And here's another surprise, I think, for that audience. They're assuming at this point, by half hour in, that Psycho must be what Marion Crane is. That she's gone psycho because she stole the money. Right? That it's of a 50s euphemistic use of the word. Or that her jilted or her boyfriend will somehow go crazy or become go psycho. Someone that we've met. The fact that
they didn't expect the guy cross-dressing his mother.
You're not. It's like three chess moves ahead of your expectations at that in 1960.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
You're thinking that Psycho. Okay, by that point, by half an hour in, if you've heard nothing about it, Psycho must be the state of mind that she's in because she stole this money.
It's great.
And your guard is down and you're like, oh, we're going to see the slow paced noir movie about tension, about this woman under pressure.
It's a great point.
And what she does. So it's just impossible to see that movie without, you know.
You know, I was getting really scared about this lady turning psycho, like she's clear. Thank goodness there's this nice innkeeper to make things nice and friendly and safe.
Right. And that it's so subtly played there. You don't even realize how where it's going. So just like you, we just to say, like, I wish I could have seen that movie in 1960. Or I think more than any other movie to have been in the original screenings of it would have been something.
Oh, what a wonderful opening to the show, except for the first 12 minutes.
No, I liked it. I just felt jilted a little bit.
Wait a second. We went from my opening to talking about Psycho.
I wonder is that a coincidence?
I am.
Is there a coincidence on this show? Is there such a thing?
No. I am in my basement.
And I thought you were going to say I am in my underpants.
This is my mother's house coat. What? So specific. All right, let's get to pray.
I confess everything that he said was true. I set him up. Everything. Don't kill me.
Works better with this.
Naru, a skilled warrior of the Comanche Nation, fights to protect her tribe against one of the first highly evolved predators to land on Earth. But should this newest incarnation of the Predator franchise, Tony, have stayed on its own planet? This is Season 7, Episode 5 of Rated P for Paranormal. We are tackling Prey. Is this one ugly MF-er? Or was Prey the answer to a prayer that we get something new and exciting in this franchise? This is directed by Dan Trachtenberg, I believe you say his name. He did 10 Cloverfield Lane in 2016. And I think I'd like to start there, Tony, before we even get to Prey. Because when I saw 10 Cloverfield Lane in 2016, it might have been like 2017 by the time I saw it. I remember thinking like, oh man, I actually really enjoyed that film and was really went along for the ride. I thought John Goodman is one of his best performances like ever. It's terrifying. It's claustrophobic. And then the ending is controversial, but I thought really satisfying in a non-satisfying way, if that makes sense. And I often would think to myself every once in a while when I would see the title 10 Cloverfield Lane, where is Dan Trachtenberg, if that's how you say his name. I just was like, that was a really good, I don't think it was his first effort, but certainly his first like major effort that got a really wide release, I think, in the mainstream. So I was just wondering where this guy was. And here he is. He pops up with this Hulu original Prey. So I was happy to see that actually. And you know, excited when I saw it was him.
I also liked 10 Cloverfield Lane. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty surprising.
A little underrated maybe.
I mean, was it? I thought
I don't know.
It made a big splash. A lot of people talked about it and was definitely, you know, gave him a career. Although, you know, that was in 2016. And since then, I guess he was working in television a lot. He did some Black Mirror. He did some of The Boys. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I like that. I mean, I think I think people learn a lot doing TV.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to see somebody go from a pretty big movie then to do some television and then, you know, come back to film again.
Yeah.
Having learned, you know, a lot of heavy technical stuff. I, you know, he's really talented.
Yeah, clearly. You don't probably get a gig like this with rare circumstance unless you've done something right somewhere along the line, I would think. I must confess that I've done a few podcasts in the past. I actually used to do a film fun pop culture podcast in conjunction with my other radio show back in Boston. And we often talked about the perfect movie. We did a couple rankings of what we viewed to be a perfect movie. And I always included Predator in that the first Predator with Arnold Schwarzenegger, I always called that the perfect action film. To me, it has everything you want in an action film. It's just, there's not much fat on that film. It is guys, special forces guys, land with an alien in jungle, rinse and repeat, and some surprisingly good performances, et cetera, et cetera. We don't need to debate Predator.
Okay.
Yeah, but
all right.
For what it is, for that, for me, that movie, that's like an example of a perfect movie.
Okay. I mean, I get what you're saying, but if you're going to be talking about action movies, then you've got to like include Heat, for instance, on that list. And you're going to tell me that Predator beats Heat. I think that we've got to fine tune this a little bit, because, I mean, you know, it really, Predator is an action movie, but it's also a fantasy sci-fi. It's not just sci-fi, it's fantasy sci-fi, really. And so it's playing by different rules, is like comic book movie as opposed to, you know, because there's plenty of great like gangster movies that are action.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's, I don't know. There's something so primal about the first Predator.
I'm not arguing that with you. I'm just getting testy already, because everything's a competition. We started talking about Ralph Macchio and then we went to sports movies, and now it's a competition about what the winner of the movies are.
I didn't even say best. I just said, I use that as an example to me of a perfect movie. And so I guess I could say perfect action movie, militaristic maybe with slash sci-fi. I don't know. I could recategorize it. I could call Heat a perfect cop movie maybe, but my point in bringing it up is not to anger you or debate you, but to let you know that I have very wary and I'm very suspect when there's something in this franchise that comes up because of my adoration for the original source material, Predator. And there's been some really bad iterations of this. It's gotten out of control, much like the Halloween franchise. We've had Predator versus Alien, things like that. Adrian Brody did a surprisingly good take on this in his version of Predator movie, a surprisingly great action hero turn, which I couldn't believe. I kind of had wary but high hopes for Prey. And in the first kind of 10 minutes, I was like, I felt like it was a TV episode. And I said, we're going to get a very restrained TV glossy version of this, and I'm not down with that. But that was just the beginning of the journey. And I'm wondering how you felt about that first act in. We meet Neru, we kind of see her life in the tribe. She wants to hunt. It's made clear her brother's a hunter. She is not welcome to hunt. She's encouraged to just go out in the field and pick flowers. She has this great dog companion. But a couple of the first early action beats, I was like, this is going to be like Buffy the Vampire Slayer Prey. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm interested to hear that you say you think it avoided that, because it didn't for me. Totally.
Okay. Interesting.
And I got nothing against it. I mean, clearly I have nothing against it being a female hero.
No, right.
Or, you know, driven by her, you know, her being the main character at all. I thought that was great. You know, was 100% behind the idea of this. Thought it was really cool. But I think it's just that I'm getting really, really, really tired of the classic hero journey myth tropes that I have to see over and over again. I don't think that it's firepower that makes a Predator movie. You know, it's not guns that make it work.
Agree with that.
But I'll tell you what doesn't make a Predator movie is a coming of age story. Like, that just doesn't, that's just not a recipe that I would have in the Predator cookbook. And they didn't make a case for me wanting to change my mind on that. No matter how interesting this might have been, I kept on feeling like, gosh, if only this had been, you know, not connected to the Predator franchise.
Right.
I feel like it would have been able to take take some really good different go some different directions with it, you know, that it was really hindered by the mythology of these movies, which is really the thinnest part of Predator. The mythology of Predator is like it's pretty lame. It's not that deep, and the world building isn't that interesting. That's not why people go to Predator movies.
So. Right. In fact, I would say that what makes the first so great is that we know nothing. There is kind of no mythology really, or world building. We don't know where this thing comes from or why it's doing what it's doing. We just know it's there and it's the ultimate predator, right? You know, and that's kind of cool. It makes it more scary. And when it reveals itself, it's terrifying.
Right. Yeah.
And now we've seen and heard and, so yeah, I'd agree. If it was taken out of the franchise, it would even be more effective. Where I might push back gently is that, because I don't know. I'll be honest right now. I'll tell you right now. I still haven't decided if I want to include it or not, because that's how on the fence I am about it. So I can be swayed, but I hear you. I agree with you. I had the same concerns, and I'm like, oh boy, this is going to be about her becoming the hunter and blah blah blah, coming of age, as you say. And I was like, given the fact that the first act was as gentle and kind of whitewashed as it was, dare I say, even maybe boring at times, add that factor of a coming of age story to that, I'm like, this is going to be a long hour and a half left for me, or whatever it is, hour and 10 minutes. And then it really picks up steam and it gets surprisingly rough and scary and violent. And the action sequences were really stunning, I thought, in some of the acts. And then I started really caring about her somewhere along the line. I think they did a really good job. She's awesome. So it's like, I agree with you, but then it kind of like fought out of itself.
I wanted to like it so much. I really did. I kept on thinking about how many interesting directions it could go in if we kept with the team concept, which is so important to most of the Predator movies. I mean, I feel like I'm gonna say, get off my mind the things that bothered me about it.
Love it.
Which I pretty much already have. And say, I think that the reason I had a problem with it was that it was a Predator movie. If they just called it something else,
it's totally fair.
And I didn't have to deal with the technology that I'd seen in so many Predator movies already, and didn't have to watch them re-explain a freaking story about how to deal with the Predator. I've seen this before. I've seen all of these movies. I know you got to cover yourself in mud. I know that the heat signatures things. I know that that's what the POVs look like. I know.
It's one of my major critiques. It's fair. Yeah. They even use the line, if it bleeds, we can kill it. And I was like, well, that was pretty on the nose.
Yeah. So I
agree.
I just felt like, you know, they had this incredibly innovative idea for how to approach this material, an incredible reset conceptually, and a great cast of like really tough, willing actors to do this. And I felt like the script kind of got lazy just in terms of where we went. We just went in a direction that you've just seen this in so many different ways before, this story. And they didn't add enough new nuance to it to make it worth it. She arrives, and of course she's the hero. Of course she's going to get what she wants at the end. Of course. And you're not really that surprised by any of the turns it takes. It's like, maybe you could argue it's a classic that way. So it's kind of a classic story. And if you're prepared for, you know, a very, very straight ahead Joseph Campbell hero's journey myth, following this young woman trying to make a name for herself, right?
Yeah.
And if you're willing to spend a lot of time with what feels like kind of like teenage angst emotions throughout some of this, then you're gonna love it. I just that's not, you know, Predator movie says a certain thing to me, and I'm like, we've got 40 minutes of not the best screenwriting about character right now. And I got a little frustrated.
It did fool me a little bit in terms of, I agree with everything you are saying. I really, truly do. But then there was something about the severity of the deaths, who died how, and the really brutalness of the fight sequences, I thought were great, that I kind of thought to myself, almost like we talked about in Nightmare on Elm Street, almost like that scene in Nightmare on Elm Street where the death was so brutal. I went, wait a second here. Anything goes. It's not to that extent, obviously, but the general feeling I got was, you know, it kind of won me over. It surprised me. I thought it was one type of Disney-esque thing. And it ended up being that in terms of the journey she goes through, and she does win, spoiler alert. But I wasn't quite sure at certain times in that movie, the way people died, I'm like, this was way more brutal than I thought it was going to be 10 minutes, 15 minutes in. So I think that might have won me over, perhaps erroneously. Perhaps it didn't deserve it. But for whatever reason, in the watching of it, I go, wow, this thing was more rough than I thought in a good way.
I kept on thinking they kept cutting away before the real rough stuff started. I wanted it to be a little rougher than that.
Yeah.
To me, they kind of soft pedaled some of it, you know.
Way more than what I thought it was going to be, I guess.
Because you thought it was going to be a Disney movie about
it. It's a low bar,
you know. Yeah. About a hero journey and a girl finding, you know, her place in society. That's a fine story. I just didn't feel, as far as that goes, I didn't think that the writer director team did anything innovative with that part of it. And that was a big part of this movie. So I think that as much innovation should have gone into how you tell that story of her specific life and not leave it all up to the extremely talented, Amber Midthunder to do all of that. She's in so much, and she's asked to do so much physical work. And then I don't think she's really, you know, maybe given the kind of dialogue or kind of character background that is unique or original enough to warrant as much time as they spend on it. That's, I guess, what I felt.
It's a tough thing to, I would imagine. And this is another little, I would put this in my critique list. There are certain lines of dialogue between the two of them, her brother, who's a big part of this, the hunter, and her, and they almost lapse into like two kids talking in the valley. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you're dealing with Comanche warriors deep in the forest, and like, sis, are you really going to go after this thing?
I know. I have this in here. It's like very anachronistic to me.
It's very.
But I think it's worth talking about because they had to make a choice, and I understand that they wanted to make these characters feel like we understood them and we were with them, and that their life wasn't so different than ours that we couldn't relate to them. So right. I get that they wanted a younger audience to feel like they were, you know, much more alike maybe than in fact we were. 300 years ago is a long time. I think culturally we saw some anachronism here, which bothered me a little bit, having seen movies that I think were really pushed against that in more maybe art movies, I guess. I never quite got out of feeling like this was a bunch of Beverly Hills kind of kids, you know, hanging out around a coffee shop.
And I think you're right. I think go ahead. Sorry.
No. And that would have been interesting, I think, if I had chosen to watch the dubbed Comanche version of it, because it is in Netflix, you have the opportunity to listen to it in Comanche.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, yeah. I would have.
Well, I tried to, but the problem is that it's a dubbed version, so it's not like they shot a version in Comanche. And English, the same actors came in and dubbed it.
Yeah, no,
but it's not quite. So I went with seeing what the actual actors did in the moment set, and I'm kind of interested to see it again in the dubbed version, because I think that would maybe take care of that problem. I'm sure the language would be less colloquial, a little bit less modern. I mean, I literally have there's one point where he goes, hey, you know, sis, where are you going?
Exactly.
Where are you going? Like, exactly. It was very offhand. And no, that's not to say that I'm sure people throughout history all over the world have talked in their version of colloquial.
Well,
but it just seemed so particularly
That's the whole modern. Point, isn't it? That's the whole point, isn't it? Is like the director wants you to feel like they like how they hear it. So everyone on earth ever forever, no matter what language, no matter what time, they have their version of like, hey, yeah. What's up, but what's up, man? You know,
yeah.
But your point is very valid. And I cringed a couple of times too, during some of those, because here's the thing. They didn't fully commit to it either way. There are times when they speak very like what maybe we would expect. And then all of a sudden it turns into like these kind of valley conversations in the next scene. So,
well,
it was difficult.
I don't speak whatever French was being used in this movie or like French, like patois. Because some of it didn't sound like French to me. I don't know what they were speaking, but.
Oh, those, the warrior guys.
The trappers. Oh.
The trappers,
the French guys.
That's what I meant. Yeah, the hunters.
I bet if I had listened to them, it would have felt more like 1700s English,
right?
Which was a little more formal. I don't know if I felt like there could have been some middle ground where there was some. I don't know. It just seemed modern. They seemed modern. Their relationship seemed just modern. It didn't seem like. We were going back in time. It seemed like they were pulling us with our modern mentality into the story, which I think maybe some people really dig that. And for me, I just feels like I just don't know quite where I am. It's hard to commit to being back in time for me without the fakey acting, I guess the fakey back in time acting. I don't know what it is.
Right. Yeah. And I did also enjoy the reveal of her kind of solving it. Again, not groundbreaking, but it was like she had to figure this out, and she did in kind of, I thought, like a really fun, cool way. I thought that climactic scene was kind of exciting and fun. And then to watch her take her place, I don't know, I guess I fell for it. Watching her take her place as the rightful heir huntress, you know, at the end was fun for me. And I was like, you know what, this was better than I thought. But I think you've hit on something that I held it against itself, and the bar was so low that it being marginally better than I thought it was gonna be made me give the illusion that I like this thing a lot more than I do in talking to you, because some of the things you're talking about I really noticed also. And that's why I said I was on the fence about it. I was like, boy, I had a good time watching it, but then I had a big hesitation also.
Well, it's one of these movies that is so reliant on its initial concept that kind of punches you in the nose, like,
right,
Predator, but you know, 300 years ago with Plains Indians, and you're like, wow, that is cool. it's such an interesting. You know, it just sparks your imagination, and it's such like a spicy idea. Like you're, right. I want to see that movie. It almost played out in the trailer.
Yeah.
That I could have about this movie happened in the 2 minutes of whatever trailer I saw of it, where I was like, they suckered me for a while into thinking this was a different kind of adventure movie. And then they brought in the Predator idea. Very subtly, and you're surprised by. I wish I had had that experience watching this movie.
Right,
and I don't know. They're just, you know, Maddie. There just weren't any surprises at all in it. After we saw that she could throw an axe, but they're honestly, what surprises were there?
No, I agree. Not many. Not many.
It plotted along. I mean,
I was surprised by the level of action I got and violence and ferocity of the creature. I didn't think it was even going to be that much, but I agree. There's no inventiveness here. Although I did enjoy, and this is a separate point. I'm not arguing. Separate point. Watching her manipulate that axe, I found really fun and really well done. That when she kind of tied the string to it and could whip it back between the trees, I thought of Pound Ridge.
I have it right here.
I'm like, wow, that was Pound Ridge on
steroids. There was literally one shot where I was like, Pound Ridge, the what? Yeah.
So by the way, I literally texted Tony. I said, we've gotten multiple requests to release Pound Ridge. So we're going to do that, I promise. And we'll even talk about it on the episode a little bit. We'll release it first, and then we'll talk about it here on the episode. It's the short that Tony and I made together. But yeah, there's a knife into a tree scene, we doing that, and that's used to great effect here. I loved that, and that's a that's just a moment I really enjoyed watching her do that with the axe, and she's a badass. I really mm-hmm. like her.
Oh yeah, I mean she totally sells it. They all sell the action stuff.
Yeah,
they really all do. The whole company of actors does.
Yes,
and they're doing stuff. I don't know. It's like you're used to seeing people with like military gear and padding on and helmets right. and stuff, and it's like yeah. no. They're in like, you know, a little light suede jacket and, you know,
or no shirt. Yeah.
It looks pretty like it was pretty rough on them. And they, you know, yes, they sold the action really well. And I don't know why I'm a fuddy duddy. I don't know why.
Everything you said is really accurate.
I guess to my point is that I think this group of actors could have handled a better written script, a script that took me on a little bit of a journey of what was going to happen next. The biggest problem for me, too, one of the biggest, is they kept stopping the film to show me supposedly badass predator stuff that I've seen now for 20 years.
Right.
I've seen it do the same. I'm going to rip your skull out. I'm going to scream. Yes. I'm going to do the same. Sew my leg up. Everything that you've seen 1,000 times. And how many times they stopped trying to sell that stuff in like Terminator 2 after a while. There was a part of that design that they just let alone, even as silly as that franchise kind of got too. I don't know. Why is the Predator so dramatic? I mean, honestly, it's like a Fosse dancer. Every time they cut to him and he's killed somebody, he's got to do these like really dramatic moves, and I'm like, I realized something about him because I had too much time with him in this movie. I'm like, this guy's, he's just kind of an asshole. Like he stopped scaring me. And I started thinking he was like more like Patrick Bateman. Like if Patrick Bateman were an alien that went around killing people, that's kind of what that's what he is like.
Hey, which one's Patrick Bateman? I'm thinking Justin Bateman.
Patrick Bateman is American Psych is a
yes, the character.
Yes.
Yes, 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 yes. Yeah, I was thinking of Justin Bateman. Like, okay,
oh, no.
Put down the phone. Put the phone down. Okay, we're going to the Ozarks. Okay, put the phone down. You okay?
No.
Put the phone
no, down. Patrick Bateman. Yeah. He's like, you know, he's got all this fancy gear and he's really over dramatic when he kills somebody. It's just like, he kills a wolf. Like okay. He's killed everything and he kills a wolf and he's as excited about this as he is. I'm sick of him. I'm done with him as a character. I think he's ridiculous.
Yeah. So,
and that funny. Really bothered at this point in the game. I think that's really why this movie didn't work for me is we kept on cutting away from a fairly interesting realization of 300 years ago and what life was like with this girl trying to make her way in this tribe, and then I have to spend time with this idiot alien.
This is a point that I made note of too. I said it's a backstory. This is Predator coming way before, you know, Schwarzenegger and company would ever meet him. So because of that, I wish they had done less with the Predator, feeding into the fact that it's kind of maybe the first time it's visited this planet, maybe not, who knows, like a very early people dealing with it. And its mystery would have been much more frightening, even though we know, because we've seen the other movies, what it can do. Not seeing it would feed into their fear. Is it a god? Is it one of the things we've put on our totem poles? Is it a forest demon? You know, yeah. Like the mystery of it. This movie could have used actually less writing, even with the characters. Based on the dialogue problems we've talked about, like the whole thing of her wanting to be a hunter and not go out and collect weeds, that could have been done with a look between her and the mom.
They weren't weeds. That was a potato.
Sorry. The magic elixir medicine.
Okay.
That she was.
Oh, that,
I think I hate
there
this
was
movie.
A potato earlier, too.
I think you've made me hate this movie. But, you
we're
know,
flipping on it
during the I told you I could be easily swayed. But I did notice this too. I felt like this is one of the rare cases where the movie needed less writing. You know, everything could have been shown. I think of a movie like Apocalypto with Mel Gibson, and it's not a supernatural movie, but man, things are done with looks and eyes and camera moves that tell you everything you need to know what's going on in that tribe at mm-hmm. all times. And it could have been a look for the mom, you know, grab your gathering thing and put the bow down and just, we could have just seen it. We didn't need the expository dialogue that we got. And we didn't need so much on the alien. You're 100% right.
Yeah, I mean.
There's no mystery. Because for them, it would have been like, what the, there's even flying things in the sky? Like, what? And that's another thing they blew. They showed a really cool hidden image of the craft, like almost translucent through the clouds. I go, oh, awesome. All right. It was clearly an effect, but it looked pretty good and mysterious. And that could have been anything. Could have been a storm. Who knows? A surge of electricity. And then like just moments later, you just see the craft CGI. It's like, oh, no, you had it. Why am I now seeing it so clearly computerized?
Well, she brings up that she saw what she calls the Thunderbird.
Right.
She, that's what she interprets that as in the sky.
Right.
Which is, I'm glad they brought it up. But if that was a part of their tradition or their religion or their history, then having seen the Thunderbird would have been a bigger thing for everybody, right? That's where I got lost.
Sure.
I just felt this opportunity to deal with the idea of, you know, of ancient contact was lost because they decided to put it 300 years ago rather than maybe 1,000 years ago and deal with what to me would have been a really interesting thing would be they could have taken the Predator franchise and really opened it up by implying that that's what's been visiting. That's what's been doing cattle mutilations. That's what skinwalkers are. That's what the locals had seen since for 2000 years, you know, that part of it was just a fumbled part of the story. And I got a little annoyed that they didn't really do anything with that. And
you're right. That's why seeing less of the alien would have been so much better, because when you factor in, like I said, that what they would make of something like that was left. You know who did a good job of that better than this movie? You're going to laugh when I say the title, but who did a much better job of dealing with this specific issue of a 19th century group of people seeing something come down from the sky is Cowboys versus Aliens with Harrison Ford. I'm serious. That movie, when they see that thing, they're like, what the, they react the way you would want someone to react to a movie like that. Like they're like, what, is that a flying carriage? They're like, what the f-? you know? And it's like, yeah, it's satisfying.
Yeah. I mean, like, I guess that's, I don't remember that movie that well. I should see it again, but, I missed her reacting to, so she saw Thunderbirds. Isn't that a big deal to actually have seen it? It just seemed like they were missing.
She also says it's the Chuckataw or something that means whatever demon, forest demon or whatever. I forget what the
right.
And they kind of gloss that over
dropped.
Too.
It's go, just oh, dropped yeah. and not really dealt huh. with. So you think, I mean, like if you all have names, if you all have names for this stuff, then maybe tell us that's part of the deal.
Right.
But they just kind of dropped it.
All right.
Also, how the I gotta say, it was one of those movies that was a little dim on the lighting there at the end. I have to ask you how the I'll ask you after because it'd be spoilers, but I really don't know what happened. I know the outcome. It's clear at the at the end who lives and dies, but I couldn't tell you right now how any of that went down or why.
I literally forget. Hold on. Like, I don't remember. I wasn't confused. I'm just literally forgetting right now how it ends.
Well, I wasn't confused. I'm not confused by what I can't see.
Got it. Right.
I couldn't see. Right. That was my point. It's like another one of these movies that's shot in the dark. And I maybe it's just my eyes are going. Maybe my eyes are going.
No,
it's totally possible. But
it's
I thought I was fainting. I thought I was having a seizure. And I wasn't. I just, my TV was too dark. Maybe that was what it is.
No, it's one of my, I went off on this not probably 2 weeks ago, if not last week, about, yes, I completely agree. These movies are, God, it's frustrating.
Isn't it funny too? Okay, another thing that's funny. Okay, I read this. maybe it's not true. I this is something I read that the Comanche people did not live in the Great Plains.
Oh, geez.
They apparently were in Texas in the Southwest, and then it was a Sioux maybe that was up farther up there in the Great Plains. It's a true thing.
You know,
there were a lot of tribes, but they were not there apparently.
Whoops.
So how well is this Alien Predator movie researched is what I want to know.
Right.
Is that how aliens really work when they come here?
Right.
I don't know. I don't feel like they explained it.
So I don't think that, I think you've been very effective today because I think I know I'm going to vote on this now. But I will say this, as we often do, I'm not going to give it a rated P for paranormal. I'm going to give it a P for pass. But I am going to say I think it's a fun watch. It's one of those ones where I would say it's a great, it's right there in Hulu streaming. Give it a watch. You'll enjoy some of the action. She's awesome. Fight sequences, very fun. But yeah, it's not strong enough. No way. No way.
If you don't need any more than a strong, you know, lead character, kicking a bunch of butt, then great. You'll probably enjoy it. I don't love that. This is a kind of action movie that I've fallen out of love with. I don't maybe have an interesting take on it because I just don't. You know, that story maybe I've just seen so many times that I just want, you know, a different plot unfolding.
Yeah, I would say go watch the original or even the Adrian Brody one. I think there was some kind of better stuff in that because they were on their planet. At least there was some new creatures. And
first
things.
Half was pretty cool.
It was fun.
I liked the team. Yep. Assembled for it, you know,
weird mix of assassins, and I thought that was great fun. Him realizing they're not on Earth but on their planet was a horrifying revelation. Really fun. So yeah, I think we both agree on this. We're gonna not put it on our shelf.
I'm not putting it on my shelf.
Now here's one great thing about it, mixed in with some of the earlier stuff I said that I did like about it, is her buddy. Her dog, her companion, one of the best characters in the whole thing. And that brings us to our top three list this week, top three buddy dogs in film and television history. Get your list together and you can tell us what we missed when we come back with top three dogs.
One pup has gone from the animal shelter to the big screen. That's right. Coco is the breakout star in one of the summer's biggest hits on Hulu. She plays the lead character's four-legged companion in the film Prey. It comes after Fulton County Animal Services took care of Coco in early 2021. The shelter said in a post on its Facebook page that it shines a light on the potential of shelter dogs and what they really are capable of when given a chance. Coco reportedly had no film training, was adopted by her forever family specifically for this project.
Tony, we often memorialize this award every week. There one buddy dog that represents all buddy dogs?
Well, I don't know if I'm going to step on your toes, but I thought this week could call it like the Toto Memorial Dog Companion Award.
So it's either going to be Toto, Benji, or Lassie for me. So I think Toto completely works. It's the most paranormal of the three mentioned. So yeah.
Well, that does, that to me is a fairly important. Fairly. Yeah.
Well,
and also that it be a movie because Lassie was not, Lassie was a TV show.
Oh, you're going to not like my top three.
You're going off course here. It sounds like
I rarely make my top three paranormal. I mean, if it happens to work, fine.
I feel it would be a good idea.
All right. So Toto, the Toto Memorial Buddy Dog Companion in film and television history. Tony, would you like to start or me?
I'm happy to start. And I'm going to start with a full confession that my first choice is not paranormal either. So,
well.
Yeah.
You're like a regular Billy Zabka from Karate Kid.
No, I was just looking for comedy wherever I could desperately find it in this broken minefield of a landscape that we have.
Just describe my entire adult life.
My number three is going to be Brandy from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, played by three different wonderful dogs, Sayura, or Sayuri, Cerberus, and Siren, all contributed some time to play that character.
Great.
One of the great dogs for me in movie history, for sure.
And what a great use at the end. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it, you know, Brandy does have a very pivotal role.
Oh,
in this film, in a very unexpected and great way.
If only that were true, right? If it, right. only it went down like that. If
that's just the only, yeah.
And the Manson yeah. family had met Brandy. Oh, boy, mm-hmm. we all wish Quentin's world were true, especially yeah. with Inglourious Bastards as well.
Yeah.
Okay, my number three is something I haven't done yet, a brand new movie I saw literally this past weekend when traveling, and the second I saw this dog, I thought, well, we hadn't created this list yet, but I'm like, this is one of my all-time favorite dogs in movie history, and it doesn't let you down. This movie is called Lou. It's a 2022 Netflix streaming original starring Allison Janney from West Wing, who plays a badass, like a former CIA kick-ass female lead character. CIA, it's so fun. Her dog Jax is loyal, awesome looking. It's a Catahoula leopard dog. I looked it up. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but a Catahoula leopard dog. Kind of lavish. Oh, what did I say? Leopard dog?
You said leopard dog.
Catahoula leopard dog. I combined the D's. I'm sorry.
Leopard.
Leopard dog. And it looks like a mix between like a German shepherd and a lab, maybe. Just awesome. Awesome in the movie. She, you know, it's one of those dream situations where it's never like that in real life, but she's like, you know, they're literally like 17 miles from her compound in the woods. And she's like, Jax, home now. The dog just goes home. Like, that doesn't happen.
That's good. All right. Awesome. Yeah. I'll check that out. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
My number two is the dog named Boy in a really fun movie called Lovin' Monsters. Boy is a Australian shepherd or cattle dog. It's an Australian breed.
Okay.
Played by two dogs, Hero and Dodge, both contributed time to play the dog Boy in Lovin' Monsters. Lovin' Monsters is a super fun movie. And it has one of the great team ups between, you know, this young kid trying to make his way from his compound after the apocalypse to his girlfriend's compound, not knowing if she's alive or dead. And he picks up this stray dog along the way whose previous owner must have worn this dress, because he carries around a red dress everywhere in the movie.
Oh, wow.
In his mouth. And it's kind of heartbreaking, because you know what it represents, and also it leads to a lot of really funny stuff. It's a really fun movie, and the dog is awesome.
I've never seen it. I'm looking at photos of the dog now. All in. Love it. Great call. That's another one I've put on my Tony list of misses, that you give me great lists of movies to watch and catch up with. My number two was almost my number one. This is Baxter from Ron Burgundy, the legend of Ron Burgundy. Baxter, a loyal companion in every way, literally speaks full lines of dialogue in dog to Ron, only he can understand him, is kicked off a bridge.
In the funniest moment, that makes me, the funniest line in the entire franchise. Well, now this is happening. And then he kicks the dog. I mean, God.
And Baxter survives that, a tale of absolute resilience, love, and triumph.
Well, see, that's paranormal.
Bingo. How'd he come back to life?
Not bingo. What's this? That wasn't bingo.
We should name the bingo award. There was a dog had a name. Oh.
True. Is it my turn?
Yep. I think you're at number one, aren't you?
My number one is really, to me, the champion of all time. It's Dog from The Road Warrior.
Yeah.
Played by Dog, who was actually found in the pound.
Oh my God.
And trained specifically just to do a few things in this movie. And the poor thing I mean, he's great. He's fine. He was adopted by one of the people from the movie after the movie was done, but he was terrified of all the engines. Oh. So they had to make special earplugs for him so he could get through the shoot without being scared.
No, oh, I think dog came up in a recent episode here. We've brought Matt. I think we've mentioned that dog a couple times. Awesome choice. It was right on top of my honorable mentions. I knew you were going to pick him, so I left him off my list, but that's the only reason. My number one is dedicated to you, Tony. 100% dedicated to you. Much like I got emotional talking to Ralph Macchio today, this pick might make you emotional. It's a 2-for-1. It's The Lads, Zeus and Apollo. Oh, my God.
You're killing me right now.
I mean, were there ever two better dogs in film or television history? Magnum P.I., Higgins dogs.
Greatest.
The Lads.
That's a great choice. And what's great about them, too, is that if anybody even remembers them, like, they'll think of these two scary-looking Labrador.
Doberman pinschers.
I mean,
yeah,
scary Labrador retrievers, scary Dobermans. And the fact is that they actually had a lot of personality. And if you watch the show, you could tell the difference between them. And they were actually really, really funny and not nearly as threatening as you.
Yes. Before. And their hatred for Magnum always killed me.
It's great.
it's such a running gag. Going through the whole run of the
show. Fantastic.
And yet you always had the sense, and I think there actually were episodes where they would protect Magnum when it came down to it.
Oh,
and,
yeah, they were friends, yeah, you know. Everybody got along.
Exactly. But that was another great, like...
Good call.
What's the word? Anthropomorphizing? I can't say that. Anthropomorphizing? Like, yeah, where you're just literally like, Zeus, Apollo, go into the kitchen and make a sandwich and bring out my bag.
And then we'd follow the camera. We'd just follow them into the kitchen and they'd just do...
like multiple instructions and they would do like... It's like ridiculous, but yeah.
Great choice. I have an honorable mention on
I have
on
a couple.
This. Oh, do you? Sorry. Yep.
No, go.
Who's your other?
I bet you might have this on your list. The dog and the thing that become, you know, at the beginning.
No, but a great choice.
Right? I'm sure that was a good buddy dog at some point before it became an alien creature.
Or was it?
And the German Shepherd and I Am Legend, Will Smith's dog. Great dog. German Shepherd, classic.
Yeah. Great work from that dog.
Yep.
I only have one honorable mentions, and that mention, and that's the dog Blood in the movie A Boy and His Dog.
Oh.
Blood is a Benji looking kind of dog, played by Tiger. Oh. And this is a straight up really weird sci-fi post-apocalyptic film with one of the crazier, weirder endings that you'll find.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't see this.
Also, the boy and his dog are telepathic. They have telepathic communication.
Nice.
Yeah, and it's the first thing that Don Johnson ever did.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's worth watching right then. I mean, just alone. You can't have enough Don Johnson in your life.
You can. No, there's a limit. It's a legal limit.
I'm sure many women would agree with you. Okay. That was our
silence. Can I just say that yes. I'm dying to see Aubrey Plaza's audition tape for this movie for Prey.
Oh, because the girl looks like her?
I kept on thinking that it was like they were going to like start being like an Aubrey Plaza movie.
Yes.
She looked annoyed at some of the things that were going on.
Yeah, very. Then that speaks back to our earlier.
She looks really annoyed.
Like, Mama.
Mom doesn't understand anything.
I want to be like a huntress. And you're making me pick these gross berries. Yeah, totally. And that's a major problem. Next episode, we will be back on an in-depth Skinwalker Ranch interview with one of the key showrunners and executive producers of that show. It'll be, like I said before, something you can't get anywhere else but here. So brush up on your Skinwalker Ranch. If you want to send us any questions you might have that you would like to ask, then send it to us via social media. You know where to find us. If you're listening to this, get your questions to us. We will ask Jason. And until then, Tony, I'll see you soon.
Yes, you will.
Bye, buddy.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Rated P for Paranormal. Please rate, review, and share. It really does make a difference. For more information, to participate, and even donate, go to our main page, anchor.fm/ratedparanormal. On social media, we're at Rated Paranormal. All music is by Andrew Galvins Jr. You can find him on Instagram at Kid Riga, or go to therocketscience.bandcamp.com. This podcast was created, written, produced, and edited by Maddie Blake and Anthony Arkin.
Why don't you guys do a Stallone marathon?
Why don't you? All I even needed is
something like this. I'm performing down here, Mom!